Help your small business thrive and stay connected with the Comcast Business Complete Connectivity Solution. It's the largest, fastest, reliable network. Advanced gig speed Wi-Fi and cyber threat protection. Get started for just $40 a month for 12 months with no annual contract when you add mobile. Plus, ask how to get up to a $750 prepaid card. Comcast Business, powering possibilities.
Ends 2/21/2023. Restrictions apply. Requires EcoBill and AutoPay. New 100 megabits per second internet and Comcast Business Security Edge customers only. Equipment taxes and fees extra. After 12 months, regular rates apply. Gig internet required for gig Wi-Fi.
I got my bags packed. I'm on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo.
Amateur Traveler, episode 389. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about white hillside towns, lovely beaches, and one amazing historic fortress as we go to Andalusia in Spain. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. We don't have a sponsor today for the sponsor slot, but I did want to give a special thanks to carrentals.co.uk, who gave us the use of not one, but two rental cars while we were recently doing a driving trip in Ireland. And if you get to Ireland, I absolutely recommend doing driving, even though there is some challenges of driving on the left, and driving on the left with a standard, no less. We got to go to some wonderful places like the Rock of Cashel, the Dingle Peninsula, the Cliffs of Moher, and the Burren, that you'll be hearing more about on the Amateur Traveler or at the website. So thanks again to carrentals.co.uk. Before we get into this week's episode, I do have two news stories for you. A story that made me laugh came from the UK Guardian. A wild animal park, Chessington World of Adventures, opened up a 22-acre Serengeti-style reserve that you can drive through, and they're imposing a new dress code because they say animals are getting confused when they see what looks like zebras and giraffes driving across the terrain in a 7.5-ton truck. Seems like the new dress code could be a really good idea. If you like winning contests, Richard Branson has a new reality TV show where the prize is space travel. The new show is called Space Race, so it's going to be like The Amazing Race, but you get to go into space if you win. For links to both those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome the show Crawford Hill. Crawford runs an educational travel company called Chill Expeditions and has come to talk to us about Andalusia, Spain. Crawford, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Chris. Excited to be on your show.
And so when we talk about Andalusia, let's put it on a map first. What part of the map of Spain are we talking about?
Southern Mediterranean, due south of the wonderful little city known as Granada. And there's a whole universe there between Granada and the sea. I know that area particularly well, having traveled there and then fallen in love with it, and now actually have a home in that area, in a little fishing village.
And which fishing village did you end up?
It's called La Herradura. It means the horseshoe in Spanish.
And that is east of Malaga?
Yes, it is. About an hour. Most people would fly into the region from to Malaga, about an hour up the coast from there, right along the coast. And then Granada is about under an hour, about 45, 50 minutes straight north. So you move from sea level, the spectacularly rocky and gorgeous cliffs, a coast dotted with beaches, up through the foothills of the Sierra Nevada, which circle Granada. And it's a small city, but it's extremely cosmopolitan. You have the fusion of Moorish and Christian and Jewish cultures that's unique. And of course, you have the Alhambra there. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot in between, and you could spend a week just within those 45 or 50 miles radius and have a phenomenal experience.
And what itinerary would you recommend for someone traveling to Andalusia?
Well, it depends, of course, as always, how much time. But in a week, you would want to get a good taste of the coast, and you could do a lot worse than spend time in La Herradura. And there's a couple of neighboring towns. So you could find a place in La Herradura. There are some small hotels, and there are homes to rent, even for brief periods of time, a couple of days. So I would make it a three-point itinerary for a week, sometime on the coast in La Herradura, sometime in Granada, which is an amazing walking city, And then up in the where very few North American travelers get to, up in the mountains above Granada and leading down to the coast in these white villages, as they're known. There's dozens and dozens of them.
Los Pueblos Blancos.
They're just wonderful, especially if you get off to some of the little off the beaten path there. So those three points sort of in a line, coast, villages, and then up to Granada, the city, you get an amazing cultural mix, geographic mix. And needless to say, the mountains are over 12,000 feet at the top. You can get a Swiss Alpine type hiking experience at the right time of year there, which is a surprise. While you're looking out at the Mediterranean, you know, it might be 60 degrees on this mountain pass, and it's 86 degrees down in the Mediterranean, where you could be in an hour or an hour and a half. It's special.
And you mentioned the right time of year. And having gone to Andalusia in what I would say was not the right time of year, let me ask you how you define the right time of year.
Well, and it depends. If you're in La Herradura, any time is the right time of year.
Because you're right there on the coast, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've literally been hiking up in the higher valleys when it was over 40 degrees centigrade, 104.
Right.
And then down on the coast where it was 84, same day. Mm-hmm. And so if you're up in Granada, it gets, as you probably experienced, very hot and kind of close. So you would want to sort of be doing things not right in the city in the middle of the day during some of the summer. In the spring and fall, it's spectacular there. On the coast, the weather is, I've been going to this village for over 25 years and sometimes for as long as 5 or 6 weeks. We've had like 3 days of rain in 25 years. You can count on amazing weather every day on the coast. Again, gets hot as you go closer to Granada.
Well, let's take those three areas you gave us, the mm-hmm. coast, Granada, and then those Los Pueblos Blancos in more detail. So when we go to the coast, what activities would you recommend? What restaurants, where would you recommend we stay?
Well, in La Herradura itself and the surrounding couple of towns is one further east, Almuñeca, and Salobreña is another one a little further east beyond that, all 20 minutes away. About 15 minutes down the coast is Nerja, which is a very, very cosmopolitan little town. And they're all very different. Almuñeca is very Spanish in terms of who visits. Mm-hmm. La Herradura is a bit more cosmopolitan. They attract Scandinavians and some Brits, a scattering of Americans. Nerja, quite a few Brits and Germans, as well as probably some more Americans. But all these places are, I live here in Philadelphia and everybody goes to the Jersey Shore. So it's kind of like the Jersey Shore for Granada. You do get a lot of Spanish heading down on the weekends in the summer, particularly, of course, in July and August. So June is a great time to go because the weather's ideal, but you don't have the crowds yet. And May, for that matter, April through June is awesome.
And you mentioned cosmopolitan. So there are cities there along the coast where I can go and hear no Spanish at all.
Right.
at the right time of year.
Yeah.
They really do get a lot of tourists. So we're not... Okay, great.
Now, we're way out of the Costa del Sol, which should mm-hmm. not appeal to me in any way, and places like Marbella. This is a very different, I would say, more authentic experience where you can still get by if you don't very mm-hmm. well mm-hmm. easily if you don't speak Spanish, but it's nice when you're visiting a place like Spain to actually be in Spain. Spanish, part of the whole atmosphere, I think. And you only add something, you don't lose anything if you get over that hurdle. But to your point, there are so many little surprising restaurants. There's sort of two types of restaurants. One, the sort of standard where they all literally have the same menu. They have their little iteration of the basic menu along the coast, especially. But then there are as many that are totally unique and might be a surprise to find in San Francisco or London or some other little corner of the world. So that interesting people have come sometimes to these little places and set up shop and buying local produce and fish and making some special things that you might not expect even in Andalusia. So that is sort of the best of both, where you bring in this little bit of cosmopolitan flair to what otherwise would be a pretty provincial setting.
And you mentioned interesting people, and that always intrigues me. So is there a favorite restaurant or favorite restaurateur that you would recommend that people should encounter in that area?
Oh, gosh. Well, it depends what you want to eat. I mean, mm-hmm. if it's fish, if it's meat, there's a place in Lagunadura where it's this big boat would park in the harbor. The guy would offload his crew, and they would go to La Paria right on the beach for, like, the best meats like you can imagine. Fantastic. Then there's other places that are more about the fish, like Pub David, which is an interesting name. But I go there for coffee every morning because it's a little in La Herradura. It's La Herradura is as bay as it said, the horseshoe. So it's got two on either point of the horseshoes. It rises up about 800-900 feet. And then on the other slope away from the town is a small marina. There's a restaurant over there that I go to for coffee every morning. His fish is sublime, just superb. And then there's another place that I go to just because they have this fresh avocado and fresh shrimp, honey vinaigrette, mustard vinaigrette salad that's like to die for. El Tinao, T-I-N-A-O. And that's just right in La Herradura, yeah.
And then we talk about the coast down there, and most mm-hmm. people go down to the coast there for the weather more than the beaches. I mean, you mentioned the Jersey Shore. From what I've seen, the Jersey Shore actually has better beaches than southern Spain.
Well, that, as a rule, yes, particularly Costa del Sol. However, mm-hmm. and this little region here, Chris, is actually called the Costa Tropical. Once okay. you get about a half hour above, that is to say further up the coast east of Malaga. The Costa Tropical is so cold because it has this unusual microclimate, A. B, the beaches are nice. I mean, like the beach at La Herradura is smooth stone, like flat, almost like river rocks, but they're oval and very smooth, and even their tiny ones. It's very, very nice to walk on barefoot. It's in general much nicer than the beaches further south. There's an array of those.
Anything else we should talk about before we move on to Granada?
Well, I would just say that the walking, you asked what you can do mm-hmm. in those areas. The cycling is fantastic. If people, you can rent bikes. You don't have to be out on roads with a lot of traffic. There's lots of gravel roads and even some asphalt roads that aren't used very much. So cycling is great of any kind, either hardcore or just strictly leisurely. The walking and hiking is wonderful. Because, again, you're in Andalusia, even in the summer, it would be hot if you were further up towards Granada. But mm-hmm. with the sea breeze, you can get a good walk in and go get a good lunch, and they've had a fine day already. And there's lots of little places where you can do that within a half hour of the town, and including just walking around the town itself or just above it.
And then we mentioned Granada, and you mentioned the Alhambra, but we didn't say what we were talking about. And there might be some people who haven't read their Washington Irving and may not realize what we're talking about.
Well, sure. The Alhambra is a kind of a castle / fortress that's been around for centuries that has captured every element of European and even African culture mm-hmm. over the last 1,000 years and more, and fused it, and it's still there. It is. It's still standing. It has some of those elements remain from way back in the day, and others are more recent overlays. But there are people who could go and walk around that place. It's vast and overlooks the city, and you can see the sea from it. But you could spend a couple hours there with an excellent guide, which I would highly recommend. A friend of mine actually there's a lot of people that make a career out of guiding in Granada and the Alhambra because it's so culturally rich. Mm-hmm. Our friend Nicola actually guided Michelle Obama when she took her children there a couple summers ago. And there are a bunch of other folks in his league where he can excite a 10-year-old or a 70-year-old professor emeritus from one of the best universities. It doesn't matter. He knows how to dial in to the folks he's with and bring out whatever aspects of this cultural experience they're interested in, because you can go in any direction at the Alhambra. So that it's a very interesting. It's a museum. It's geography. It's art. It's architecture. It's tremendous. And it's also, as a lot of these kinds of places are, people watching there is fascinating because it does attract the world.
Right. And this is the last of the Moorish strongholds in Spain. So this is where
exactly
Isabella and Ferdinand basically and their reconquistadors finally defeated the Moors and reconquered the rest of Spain. So very significant historically. Yeah, I would say it's probably my second favorite building in all of Spain.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it'd be second to El Mesquite in Cordoba.
Aha, excellent.
Or La Mesquite, sorry. I think I got that wrong.
It's a whole different experience every time I go there. And, of course, the time of day that you go there, early in the morning, midday, you do when I try and avoid. But there's plenty of places in the shade up there. And one of the hidden secrets there is there's an inn, a parador within the Alhambra. You can make a reservation and go there for lunch. And that is a wonderful experience. I mean, if you can actually stay there, that's the ticket. Because then you kind of have the insides of the place to yourselves. I mean, it's a big venue, so there are big tour buses that pull up and all that kind of thing. Buy your tickets on Ticketron months in advance. But if you can get into the Parador, that is really, really special. It's exquisite food, very reasonably priced, and you're in one of the great wonders of the world.
And when you mention the Paradors, you're talking about the official hotels often run in castles and old monasteries and convents and things by the Spanish government.
Exactly. Yes. And that's a whole nother conversation, but they're always wonderful wherever they are. And this one in particular is special.
And you mentioned hidden secrets. So I know the Alhambra, but I think that is quite possibly the only thing I have seen in Granada. We did one of those way too many cities in way too many days in our first trip to Spain. So what did I miss? What other little hidden things are there to see in Granada that I have to go back and see?
Well, actually, this analogy just occurred to me. So do you know what Granada means in Spanish?
I do not.
Well, and there are these icons. So it's a pomegranate. Pomegranates grow all over the place in that part of Spain, as well as are cultivated. So you see these pomegranate, the iconography of the pomegranate is everywhere. And so it's obviously the symbol of Granada. But even the as you're walking along the street, the manhole covers have like pomegranate on them. And if the fountains, they're always embellished in a certain way, most of them with this kind of imagery. So the pomegranate, as you probably know, is loaded with these seeds. And it's kind of a surprise. You open it up and, oh, look at this. And there are all these seeds, and you can eat the fruit and eat the seeds. And that, to me, is what Granada is. Literally, I liken it sometimes to like Paris on a much more manageable scale. It obviously doesn't have other than the Alhambra, it doesn't have the huge kinds of monuments that you're going to see in Paris. But it's on a very pedestrian scale, and there's a surprise around. Every two blocks, you go, oh, here's a very cool little pocket park, and then you right is Muslim, and you tuck left, and is like this little Jewish section, and then it's unbelievable. There is one of the best places to wander in a city that I've ever and feel safe.
Any particular neighborhood you would recommend wandering, or a particular path or direction you would head us in?
It's so small that you can go just about anywhere. If you're within, say, a mile of the Alhambra, which is sort of towering above, anywhere in a radius around it, sort of in a 270 degrees around it as it looks out at the city, because behind it, it goes up to the mountains. It's spectacular. There's the Albaicín, which as you're looking at the Alhambra and it rises up to the snow-covered Sierras behind it. To the north, you have this ancient Moorish neighborhood that is from which if you kind of walk up there, you do have to clamber uphill a little bit. But then the view across the valley to the Alhambra is really stunning because you have it set. Then right behind it, you have this ridge of the Sierras, which, by the way, is a ski area. And they run there pretty late in the spring. They're still skiing there. That's a special place. And again, any path you take through there, the little narrow streets, it's just a delight. So I can't really specify other than that neighborhood.
Okay. You mentioned the little towns of Andalusia, Los Pueblos Blancos. Do you have two or three favorites or things to do down in that region?
Well, so it's actually up from Granada, the ones that is kind of around the mountain. It's a big massif, the Mulhacén. It's called the primary mountain. And if you go around to the east and to the, I guess you go south a little bit, go around the massif, So it would take you an hour and a half or 2 hours from Granada by bus or by car. There's a trio of them at about 7,000 feet, far enough away that most people aren't going to get there. The Spanish love to go up there in the winter and for the holidays because there's typically not snow there, but you're in this alpine setting. But in the summer, it's just extraordinary. And these are, again, very small scale villages, totally different architecture that comes out of Morocco. There's roots of it, and it's Moorish. So it's where the Moors fled. And they still have, incredibly, centuries later. The houses are stone with stone, like slate, big pieces of slate pavers for the rooftops. And then they have these mushroom-like smokestacks that come out of these flat roofs. It's interesting.
And you say the Muslim-style architecture. I'm picturing the Mudéjar architecture, lots of tile work, lots of abstract designs and things like that. Am I in the right ballpark?
Yes, yes, that's exactly right. Okay. But the most striking thing, which you can see certainly in some other aspects of Andalusia, but these flat roofs with these big, heavy, flat pavers, as I call them. I mean, that's just odd. You don't see that anywhere else.
Sounds more like Tunisia than
Spain. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay. Again, a lot of artists and crafts folks, some of them are locals and there's a tradition within the family. Others have been attracted there because it's very conducive to creative work, I think. And so very interesting communities.
And to do or see while we're up there?
Well, again, the walking is wonderful. You can do a loop between the three. It's Pampinera, Capillera, and Boubillon are the three. And you can walk between them. It takes half a day, depending, obviously, if you go uphill or downhill. They're one right after the other going
I
uphill.
I know which way I'm going. But
yeah, seriously. But the hiking above those, that's what I referenced earlier. You can get into early summer. I've spent a lot of time in Switzerland over the years and in the Alps, and you get these alpine wildflowers and so on that you would never expect in the sort of desert climate of Spain. So the walking and the hiking, whether it's leisurely or a little more rigorous, is spectacular. And then just perusing the art vendors is a lot of fun. And again, it's not touristy is the way I would put it. It's very authentic and genuine craftsmanship, not just souvenir shop stuff.
And you say arts and crafts then that are not touristy. I'm not sure what to picture there.
Well, you see a guy making leather goods. In fact, if you got a couple of days or what have you, you know, he'll custom make a cover for your iPad or an eyeglass case or a little handbag or what have you. And just, you know, engage with you. He has the time to have a conversation, maybe in English, maybe in Spanish. Somebody who's clearly an artist who likes to share his work and his ethos with people. And you're in his shop, is his workshop kind of thing. So it's that kind of atmosphere. There's a lot of that. I'll never forget a time where we wandered into you could see from this very narrow little street, a woman working a loom that looked like it was a couple centuries old. In fact, it was a loom that had to be, you know, 10 feet across and about 6 feet high. And she made the textiles that she made with all locally dyed, the dyes from local plants and stuff, absolutely spectacular woven stuff. And she was the mayor of the town. And she had all these stories, and they were having an election soon, and she had to like leave the shop. And you can still walk around and look at. Yeah, I mean, it's just you can't believe this stuff. So it's very conducive to something beyond a tourist experience. Is the way I would put it.
When you started going down to the region, or when you moved down to the region, what was your biggest surprise?
Well, actually, my biggest surprise was that I so fell in love with La Herradura and the surrounding region. Mm-hmm. My wife and I and my kids travel a lot. We slowed down our travel to spend more time there to the point where we would always stay with a friend or rent a place. Eventually, we did build a small little bungalow there. But the surprise was when I had my friend and business partner, Eddie Rodriguez, over a few years ago when we moved from teaching into this Chile expeditions. He's been all over Spain.
Mm-hmm.
But he hadn't been that much to Andalusia. And his remark was, Chile, you have no idea how open these Andalusian people are compared to the rest of Spain. It's a very different experience.
Hmm.
And he, Eddie Rodriguez, I mean, he's very fluent in Hispanic cultures around the world. And that was something I didn't understand from someone who had a much wider and deeper cultural exposure in Spain and other Hispanic cultures. So that was a surprise to me, because I assumed all Spaniards were equally as warm and kind of open in the way that I had experienced in that part of the world, and what I was just referencing up in the white villages, where the shopkeepers invite you in and you have a conversation with them, and it's less about selling you the good than it is just about meeting another human and making some kind of connection. So that was a real surprise that I had I had been spoiled. Didn't know that everybody in Spain wasn't as equally open, shall we say. Not that there aren't wonderful people everywhere.
Right, but, sure. Yeah, and what's the best day you had in Andalusia?
I think that certainly right up there would be when I spent a day with this guy, Nicola, for the first time in the Alhambra. I traveled a lot and used to think I didn't need a guide and stuff like that, and had gotten wiser some years ago. But the depth of both his knowledge and his ability to dial in what would be interesting to my wife and me and a couple of kids blew my mind. And it was just, it gave me a whole new perspective on a place I'd been to a few times. And so that was a great day for me educationally, because it was at such a different level that it was very eye-opening for me as a traveler.
Well, and I'll have to say, we didn't do the guide. We didn't run across Nicola. And so we did the audio guide, and we enjoyed the experience, but we enjoyed it in part because we found the audio guide so over-the-top melodramatic that if you go to Amateur Traveler and you search for Alhambra, you'll see a picture of my wife just laughing out loud with this audio guide to her ear. So I think we could have used a good guide in that area.
That's funny. Well, I talk a lot about the value of good guides in my...
Completely agree, yeah. Especially for, and I'm an independent traveler. I don't tend to do tours that much,
exactly.
But especially for a day trip in a site like that, I completely agree with you. And now Andalusia is your second home there. Is there a time though that it feels not at all like your first home?
Well, let's turn that around. Susie, my wife and I, we are always aspiring to capture what we have there and bring it back to the real world of work and living in Philadelphia, where we have a wonderful home and it's a great city, but it's America in 2013 and we're all plugged in and this and that. And I can be plugged in Spain, but I can also unplug really easily and it's delightful. So that aspect, it's so natural to, you don't have to be in a jungle somewhere. You're still in a place where other people are wired in, but most people are there to be unplugged. And it's just, we're trying to always bring that back here to our lives here, which are, like a lot of people's, pretty structured and intense. So we love the intensity of being unplugged over in Andalusia. And being more in tune with just having a cup of coffee for an hour and a half. And let's have a second cup. That's what it's, and I sometimes talk about, you can go to Andalusia and travel around a little bit. Hopefully, if you only have a week, you do that. But if you have the luxury of a little bit more time or going back, then yeah, maybe you do plunk down and just soak it up in one very small little village, and it's just the most relaxing place I've ever been. And I've been on tropical beaches and on the top of mountains and solitude. This is, you can sort of have a cultural solitude in the best sense if you want it there, and then you can have this kind of ancient cultural connection if you want it. So it's a really interesting combination, Chris, that not too many places offer that.
Okay. One thing that makes you laugh, though, and say, only in Andalusia.
Jeez. Oh, man. So many. Well, I have this friend, Manolo, whose ice cream shop we took our kids to after dinner. You know, over there, everybody goes out to dinner at 11 p.m. with their three-year-olds. It's quite amazing. So Manolo's family had this ice cream shop, and we went there for decades and still do much of the time. But Manolo's, the combination of his humor, we call him the Spanish Jerry Seinfeld. He looks a little bit like Mrs. Seinfeld, and he's very funny. But on a dime, he'll become very political. And that's something that also with my business partner and former teaching colleague, Eddie. Eddie has filled me in on the Spanish love affair with politics that, again, I wasn't tuned into this kind of thing. And Manolo is like the exemplar of that. So he, you can be having this wonderful time at the ice cream shop, and all of a sudden he's on a tear about the latest political or the economy. And it just, his, the way he switches gears, like that I marvel at, because I just haven't seen it. And that's just, to me, that's Manolo, and that's something special. He lives in Granada. He grew up in a little fishing village, kind of made the big time in Granada, but he comes back to the village. I just love the sort of toggle of that and how he switches back and forth from the village to the city on a dime. So I don't know if that makes any sense, but I chuckle whenever I think of the Spanish Jerry Seinfeld. He really makes me laugh. And he'll do stuff like, again, oh, I'm coming to your house, and we're going to grill. We're going to do a grill out. It's like, okay, well, great. You don't have to bring anything. No, I'm bringing the meat. Well, he'll bring like 12 pounds of meat for, you know, five people. I mean, the generosity. And again, I think that's something very Andalusian that always makes me, I love it.
One warning you would give to people going to Andalusia?
Leave enough time to have that second cup of coffee.
Don't do the trip that I did. Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially there. You just want to soak it up in a very different way than just hanging out on some nice beach. It's sort of a cultural absorption, I think.
Now, I know economically, Spain has been hit fairly hard, and Andalusia has traditionally had a higher unemployment than the rest of Spain and has been hit even harder. How do you see that play out as you're down there?
Well, the one benefit to the traveler, of course, is that business is really appreciated.
Sure,
and we really noticed that. I mean, we're sort of somewhere between tourists and residents. But the point is, it's highly beneficial to the traveler because people really do appreciate the business, which has clearly dropped. But on the other flip side of it is, it's not like the prices have skyrocketed to make up for that. So it's everything in Europe has gotten more expensive. I think Spain is still relatively speaking. But yeah, it's tough. So that's why they don't talk about the economy. My friend Chema, who runs Pub David, he's a waiter owner. That's a whole nother story. Hmm. You know, I have many waiters that own their restaurant. But he loves being the consummate waiter, and he is. And we don't talk about the economy. He'll talk about the World Cup. He'll talk about the Rafa and Wimbledon. Talk about Formula One. We're not talking about the economy.
Interesting.
But he's so adroit at driving business that he's doing fine.
Three questions left.
Okay.
Before I get to my last three questions, what else should we know before we go to Andalusia?
We referenced the guide, but I would really look into how you find a great guide for Granada and the Alhambra ahead of time. You can pick them up on the spot spontaneously, but that's a good investment of a traveler's time, for sure. That's probably the most important thing I would recommend. It's well worth it.
Okay. You're standing at the most beautiful spot in all of Andalusia. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Well, I don't pretend to have covered all of Andalusia because I've been so taken with my little area there between La Herradura and Granada. But at dusk in October a few years ago, we were returning from a four-wheel drive vehicle, 4x4 excursion up in the Sierras, way off the beaten path in the national park. And we were coming back to La Herradura through these gravel roads in these deserted valleys. And my friend had explained the history of, you can see these valleys leading up to Granada, that this was, if you commanded these ridges, you controlled the economics, mm-hmm. the flow of goods mm-hmm. and services between the coast and inland. And I think that what crystallized there was, for a young person or somebody who's a learner, a lifelong learner, to have history so, like, there were no people there, but seeing the geography in such a spectacular setting at sunset, it really threw me right back to that time in history in a way that few experiences have anywhere. And the interesting thing about it was that there wasn't any manifestation of civilization here, like the Alhambra or this church or whatever. It was just seeing the geography and understanding its role in history. It was a very powerful experience for me. And it happened to be a spectacular sunset dropping over these distant ridges to the sea. So it was a magical moment, Chris, and both just aesthetically and educationally, it got me much more interested in pursuing the history and the whole idea of how geography is such a player in history.
Last two questions. Finish this thought. You really know you're in Andalusia when what?
Well, when you're on the coast and you smell the gambas pilpil bubbling in the garlicky olive oil, you know you're in Andalusia.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize Andalusia in three words, what three words would you use?
Well, tranquilo, mm-hmm. numero uno, culturally rich. I suppose that's two words.
If that sounded like three words total to me there. Were you going to try and cheat and get in four?
Yeah, well, teachers, you know, we're pretty good at trying to do that. But not culturally, I mean, it's culturally profound mm-hmm. and tranquilo. I think it's a good combo because you can do your thing on the beach and then you can go dive into history in any number of ways, and then at the end of the day have a gambas pilpil, and you can have it all.
Excellent.
There, yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show and telling us a little more about Andalusia. We've actually done, this is our second episode, and if you go back and listen to the original one, it's way, way back in the show archives, and you'll get to hear me completely butcher the name of Andalusia every time I say it, I believe, in that episode, but also talk about a very different area, actually talk about the area east of what we talked about today, really mm-hmm. kind of between Ronda and Sevilla.
Sure. But
Crawford, if people wanted to know more about what you're doing at Chill Expeditions, where should they go?
ChillExpeditions.com. And we love customizing educational travel for people to the places we go. Andalusia, Costa Rica, and Ecuador.
Okay. And if I gave you just a couple sentences to talk about your most interesting educational travel experience that you're offering right now, what would it be?
Chill Expeditions travels to the Galapagos in a way that nobody else does. Most folks go on the equivalent of an American a floating American hotel, and they're out on a boat. We are on the islands. There's only three islands that are inhabited, and we have a unique approach. You can still see all the animals, but you're on the islands, and basically nobody else is doing that. There are some one-off people that figure that out, but nobody's doing it as a business the way we are with the best local guides. So that's very unusual and in a spectacular part of the planet.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for coming on the Amateur Traveler.
Well, it's my great pleasure, and look forward to seeing how beautifully it all works out.
In news from the community, I did want to apologize for no show last week, but again, my target is to get out 48 shows a year, not 52, and to take 4 weeks off, and that was one of them. I was traveling through Ireland, and frankly, I don't feel bad about it at all. Speaking of traveling through Ireland, I was walking through the streets of Dublin, Ireland yesterday, and Carl Anders, who's been on the show talking about Sri Lanka, came up and said hi. I didn't know he was in town. I'm not sure if he knew I was in town either, but we just ran into each other on the streets of Ireland. If you ever do run into me, please say hi. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler because I'm off on a photo tour pretty soon. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com or on the Facebook community, facebook.com, you guessed it, /amateurtraveler. You can also follow me on Twitter at, surprisingly, Chris2X. We would also love a review of the show on iTunes because it helps people discover us. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.